Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Dynasty, the podcast. It is your host, Austin Yelton, and we are back for another episode. These last couple months, there's been a lot going, lots of ups and downs, a lot of personal things going on, so I had to take a break from the podcast, but hopefully, with everything going straight, we'll be able to come at you live from our homes and to your homes once a week. That's what I'm planning for. I'm not going to guarantee anything, but that's kind of what the aim is on the goal is right here. So let's start off this podcast. Welcome back, everybody. It is a big day for me, big day for football, big day for everything. So I figured the best day to come back on a Monday, like we always used to do, and we would be able to talk about the previous games, talk about some news going on in the NFL, and get in, get out, and be happy. Get my opinions on a couple stuff that happened. So, let's start off the day with the biggest news of the day. That is, football season is back. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Who cares about Christmas? Who cares about Thanksgiving? Who cares about any other time? Because September is always the best time of the year as we get to go and watch our favorite teams play, and football's back, baby. Whew, we needed it. We sure needed it. So let's kick things off with the Thursday night game. We had the Packers. We had the Bears. 10-3 final. It was a pretty boring game for the non-fan, but for a fan like me, I found enjoyment out of the Thursday night football game. Aaron Rodgers came out, and he didn't look strong. He looked like previous year Aaron Rodgers, but didn't play much in the preseason, so you got to kind of cut him a little slack, get the kind of kinks worked out. This is why I think that NFL teams should play their starters in week 4 and not week 3. Week 3 should be where all the rookies and all the guys trying to make the team should play, so that way they have their go game where everybody's there battling it out. Then week 4 is when your starter should play, you know, maybe 3 quarters, maybe a half, more like a half. And then more like the backup guys that are fighting for starting positions get in there as well. So that way you know kind of where you're at. And that way the guys can get right into rhythm. And then their next game that they're going right into is the one that counts. You kind of put them at a disadvantage. You know, you play them the 1 week, then they take a week off, then they come back in. Maybe the timing's wrong. And it's always like, it always feels like a buffer week going into week 1. So this way, you know, you play your starters week 4, they get the timing and the rhythm down, and then you go into week 1, and everybody that was on the field in week 4 is basically going to be on the field in week 1. You got your slots and your receivers that are getting in on certain packages, your duo and triple running back sets that some teams have. So that way, you kind of see where you're at, and it can kind of get that timing and rhythm down. And you've seen kind of the effects of that. Green Bay and Chicago offensively didn't look very sharp. Defensively, it's more of a scheme. It's more of instincts on the defensive side. So you can just find the ball, hit and tackle the ball. If you mess up on your assignment, if somebody else gets the ball or your guy gets the ball, you know, you just tackle the guy with the ball. So it's kind of more of an instinctually defensively. That's why we don't see that much defensive lack there. But what we do see is a struggle most of the time. Most of the time, there are some outliers, and we'll get into that today. But most of the time, offensively, you're lacking. And if we play the guys in week 4, we'll kind of see that fade out a little bit. So let's take a little bit of a dive into the stat lines for week 1. Let's take a look at the Bears box score, and let's take a look at some stats here. So Mitchell Trubisky, okay, 26 for 45 for 228 and a pick, okay? A QPR from a scale of 0 to 100, he got a 65.5. Now, personally, for me, I think he didn't have a great game. He did not have a great game at all. And that pass at the end to Allen Robinson in the corner of the end zone when he threw the pick to Amos, it didn't look pretty. That was not a good throw, ill-advised. You're in year 3, Mitch. This is your time to shine. You have no excuses of you're a young guy and you're still learning how to play and you're still learning the system. This is your year. This is your second year under Nagy. This is your third year in the league, okay? You got to come out and you got to make a bigger impact offensively. I think, honestly, from what we've seen last year, I think Mitchell Trubisky could get it done. I think he can. I think he can go out there and play very well. I really do. But Thursday night, he did not look like that kind of quarterback that can lead your team to a Super Bowl, okay? The Bears are wanting the Super Bowl. They want to be playing as the one of the final two teams, okay? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They're not looking for a second place finish. They're not looking for a wild card spot and go home. They're not looking for one playoff win, maybe two playoff wins. No, if they get to the wild card and get the two, get to the championship. No, they want to be playing in the Super Bowl this year. And can Trubisky lead them to the Super Bowl? Honestly, from what I've seen, I don't know. The jury's still kind of out on this guy, and it kind of sucks because your third year in the league, the next year is your money year, is your contract year. They traded a lot of assets and a lot of pieces to move up to number two and take you when you were coming out of college of North Carolina. And from what we've seen, who really knows if he's ready to lead this team to the Super Bowl? Hopefully in the second game, second week, he can come out and play better and play like a veteran quarterback that we all know he can be. But can he take the Bears to the Super Bowl? Now, the Bears, if you take the quarterback, say if we put, just for sake of argument, prime Tom Brady as the Bears quarterback right now in 2019. This is 2006, 2007, 2008 Tom Brady. Prime Tom Brady. We put him in here. The Bears are 100% Super Bowl team. We put prime, honestly, if we put post-prime, if we put Minnesota Vikings Brett Favre as the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears with the pieces that are around him, the Chicago Bears are a Super Bowl contending team. When we put Mitchell Trubisky in at quarterback around this offense and around this team and the pieces that they have, are they truly a Super Bowl contending team? The jury's still kind of out on that. Last night didn't look too good for their case. 3 points. You have one of the most potent defenses. They held them to 10 points. They held one of the best offenses in the league and one of the best quarterbacks in the league to 10 points offensively. And you can't get the job done at punching in for six. That kind of is lacking. Also, what I did see from Chicago is a lot of spread out on the run game. They need to kind of focus that up a little more. I know you like the idea of having a three running back head and just keep pounding the ball with three different guys, but you're going to kind of hinder these guys. You get a guy like Montgomery who's going to come out here. He only had six touches running the ball, and he had one reception. That kind of guy, the playmaking ability that he has, you got to give him the ball a lot more. You got to give him 10 to 15 touches a game, even if it's not rushing. If you want to throw the ball a little bit more, you got to throw him the ball, get him some screens or something. You know, Tariq Cohen didn't even have a single rush. He led the team in receptions on the day, but he didn't run the ball one time. He never got a handoff. You know, we need to run the ball more in Chicago. You don't have that kind of quarterback that's going to be able to throw the ball 45 times effectively, as you've seen Thursday night. You have to run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. If you're Chicago, you're in a good spot. You have three really talented running backs. So you got to punch it down people's throats to set up the pass game because Trubisky didn't look super, super strong. Now, we're going to flip it over to the Packers side. And we're not going to take a deep dive into this on every game, but just the important games, in my opinion, the important games. So we're going to dive into the Packers box score. Aaron Rodgers, 18 for 30 for 203 yards and a score. He had a 97.7 QBR. I don't agree with that. I think he had a good day, but not a Aaron Rodgers kind of day. He had a good day, but not an Aaron Rodgers kind of day. If you look at the receiving, Jimmy Graham, Marquez Valdez-Scantling had good days. Davante Adams had good days. There's no real eye popper that comes out of this Chicago Bears and Green Bay Packers game. You know, there's nobody that really jumps out and goes, he had a day. He had a day. Now, moving on to the Sunday games. You want to talk about somebody that had a day, okay? This guy, Lamar Jackson. Now, okay, so we're going to take a dive into Lamar Jackson. Okay, he had probably, and actually I take that back, he had literally his best career game. A 158.3 QBR, that is a perfect QBR, okay? A perfect. He had 100 QBR, like 17 for 20, 324 yards, 5 touchdowns to no picks. You know, he ran the ball 3 times. They say Lamar Jackson is not a throwing quarterback. He ran the ball 3 times yesterday. He only ran it 3 times. That is impressive. That is definitely impressive. Lamar Jackson came out here and he put on a show. He put on an absolute show. And you know who else put on an absolute show that was wearing the purple and black? That's Marquise Brown. 4 catches, 147 yards, and 2 scores. Just death-defying things. He only had 4 catches, but he was averaging 37 yards per catch. That is unbelievable. Who is this guy, and why are we not heard about him a lot quicker? This guy is unbelievable. And then, if you take an even deeper dive into their stat line, Mark Andrews had 8 catches for 108 yards of his own, you know, and a touchdown of his own. So he had a career day. You know, 8 catches. He led the team in catches and was second in yards. And nobody really talks about him because Marquise Brown had such a big day. He almost had 150 yards receiving. That is crazy. Lamar Jackson wanted to silence some critics with this ball game. You can tell that Harbaugh came into this. Jim Harbaugh came into this and he said, look, there's a lot of doubts on you throwing the football. We're going to come out here and we're going to show them that you can throw the football, that we see something in you. And he made an effort and made a point to throw that football, and he did just so. That 17 for 20, that is unbelievable. Like, that is amazing for somebody that's labeled as a non-throwing quarterback. Go to the Miami Dolphins side. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Just a mediocre day for a mediocre quarterback, in my opinion. Kenyon Drake only had 4 rushes. Kellen Ballage, 5 rushes for -1 yards. Not a great start to Miami season. Not a great start. You give up, defensively, you give up 59 points. That is just, it sucks. You know, Miami, they feel like they were kind of battling back here, and maybe they had a push this year. Then you trade away Kenny Stills. You trade away Laremy Tunsil. Honestly, Minka Fitzpatrick looks really strong. Josh Rosen, I kind of like Rosen, but I'm not really sold on Rosen yet. We haven't really got a big plethora of games yet. Kenyon Drake's a pretty nice back. But outside of that, I'm not really sold on anything Miami is doing. So Miami's kind of just in a complete rebuild. Is Miami battling for Tua Tagovailoa? Like, can Tua Tagovailoa be a Dolphin next year? Maybe that's what they're fighting for, is to get Tua, get the number one pick, grab the Alabama quarterback, and start to rebuild their franchise. And if that is the case, Tua is going to be in a really, really, really hindering situation depending on how they draft. Because they did acquire some picks from Houston, and they're building up picks of their own. I think they have, I want to say they have 2 seconds and 2 fourths. That could be, yeah, I believe so. I believe they have 2 seconds and 2 fourths. And then they just acquired the trade with Houston as well. That's what how they got it. So I think maybe if they draft well, they could be okay. But I mean, Laremy Tunsil was what is he, 26? Was Laremy Tunsil was your left tackle of the future. Like, I'm looking this up right now, but Laremy Tunsil was a good tackle. I don't understand what the motive behind trading. He was only making $2.1 million. When was he drafted? Because I don't think his contract was coming up anytime soon. And then they just moved him. It baffled me. I was not expecting that. So he was drafted in 2016. So next year would have been his contract year. So you still had him for two more years, and you probably could have re-upped him because you have the cap room for that. And he's only 25 years old. He's 25. Like, he's a star left tackle, honestly. A star left tackle that they let go for draft picks. They could have been a centerpiece of their franchise for many years to come. But, I mean, I guess Miami wasn't too sold on Laremy. I very, very much disagree with that. Let's move on to the next game. Let's take a look at Philly-Washington. Big game, big implications. Philly's trying to make a statement, show that they are not a fluke on winning the Super Bowl. They want to come back and battle for another one. And starting off, Philly wasn't looking too hot, to be honest. To start off the game, they weren't looking so great, but to finish it up, Carson Wentz, 28 for 39 for 313 and three scores. Miles Sanders had 11 carries for 25 yards. Alshon Jeffrey had the only rushing touchdown of the day. DeSean Jackson. Now, DeSean Jackson coming home. He's back in a Phillies in an Eagles uniform. He comes out here and goes off for 8 catches, 154 yards, and 2 scores. What is up with these young slot receivers just making waves? DeSean Jackson, 8 catches, 154. Marquise Brown, he had 4 catches for 147. And John Ross, who going into this game against Seattle, now I know I moved on pretty quickly from the Eagles game, but John Ross going into Seattle or going into this game had 216 receiving yards last season altogether. 216 receiving yards. Yesterday against the Seahawks, he had 7 catches for 158 yards and 2 touchdowns. John Ross had literally the best game of his career, and it just like the slot receivers were booming yesterday. They were just unbelievably just all over the place, on fire. Going ballistic. I was in shock and awe to look at these receivers, man. These slot receivers just coming out here and balling. We're going to move on to our last game that we're going to talk about in this segment. We have the Patriots taking on the Steelers. New England won 33-3. That is very impressive. Very impressive. Pittsburgh is always tough. They're always a tough team. And to lose by 30 is just... New England's always had Pittsburgh's number. New England has always had Pittsburgh's number. It's never been a shame. Tom Brady has always had success against Pittsburgh. Last night, he went 24 for 36 for 341 and 3 scores. Sony Michel, only 14 rushing yards on 15 rushing attempts. Rex Burkhead led the team in rushing at 44. And then Philip Dorsett, of an ex-Colt, 4 catches, 95 yards, 2 punches into the end zone. And guess what? They're going into next week with an addition of Antonio Brown. The Patriots look strong, man. They look very strong, very scary. On the flip side, Ben Roethlisberger went 27 for 47 for 276 and a pick. James Connor, had 10 carries for only 21 yards, but he had 4 catches for 44 yards. And Juju, coming off his Pro Bowl season, 6 catches, 78 yards. I expect big things from James Connor and from Juju Smith, but when you get shut out and held to only 3 points like they did last night, it's not looking great. We're just going to take a quick dive right now. Currently, while I'm recording this game, this podcast, the Texans are taking on the Saints in Monday Night Football. The Texans are winning right now 7-3. And Deshaun Watson, who has been projected to have a big year, is right now 7-for-12 with 103 yards. So he's living up to the hype right now. Deshaun Watson is supposed to be unbelievable, and they have high hopes on him. A lot of people are saying that he's going to have a big year. So we'll really see and find out if he's really going to have such a big year like everybody's saying that he's going to. So, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We just got done talking about the Patriots. And this is a big debate topic. And I could spend a lot of time talking about this. But I got a question the other day. And I kind of just sat down and I thought about it personally. And I'm going to kind of give my opinion on this. Now, am I right? I don't know. And do other people agree with me? I believe so. But the question is Julian Edelman a Hall of Fame receiver? When Julian Edelman decides to hang it up, will he take his spot with his bust in Canton? It is a big question. It is a huge question because Julian Edelman is always been New England's number one receiver. For how many ever years he's been in the league, he's always been New England's number one receiver. So the big question is he a Hall of Fame player? We're going to take a dive into his stats, okay? He's played, I want to say, 8 years. Let me just get a quick check here. That would be 10 years. So he's played 10 years in the NFL, okay? Last year alone, we're just taking a look at last year, he had 108 targets. He had 74 receptions for 850 yards and 6 touchdowns receiving. Julian Edelman has only had 1,000 yards receiving twice in his career. That would be in 2013 and in 2016. He's had 1,000 yards receiving. 1,000 yards receiving. In 2014, he finished with 972. And in 2018, he finished with 850. Those are the two closest to 1,000. Now, barring injury, we'll discredit 2012 because he only played 9 games. And we'll discredit 2015 because he only played 9 games. 2018, he played 12 games and still had 850 receiving yards, which is pretty impressive. But he's never had like the big standout numbers. Now, what's going to set him apart is this little fun fact. He's second all time in playoff receiving yards in the history of the NFL. He is the second leading all time receiving yards leader in the playoff history, which is crazy. That's crazy to think about. He literally is right behind Jerry Rice in a very impressive category. Now, he's been a Super Bowl champion 3 times, and in 2018, the last Super Bowl that he won the MVP of the Super Bowl when he had a huge, huge year. He just, like, that is just so impressive to me that you are second all-time in playoffs, but is that enough? Is that enough to get him into the Hall of Fame? Now, personally for me, I don't think he's a Hall of Fame receiver because the numbers don't lie. They speak for themselves. He's only had 1,000 yards receiving twice. He's only had 7 touchdowns in 2015, 6 touchdowns in 2013. And then 6 touchdowns in 2018. Other than that, discounting those 3 years out of 10 years, 7 of those years, he's not had over 5 touchdowns. And he's not had, in 7 years, he's not had over 1,000 yards receiving. That, I don't know. I don't feel like that is enough to win him the Hall of Fame trophy. In 2011, he played 13 games. He only had 9 targets. He had 4 catches in the whole year. And that's just baffling to me. You know, Julian Edelman, he's a very good player. He's one of the best all-time playoff receivers. But is playoff receiver stats enough to get him to the Hall of Fame? I really don't think so. I think that he's a very good player. I think he is one of the best, if not the best, Patriots receiver in NFL history. Now, we're talking about pure Patriots receiver. We're not talking about Randy Moss. We're not talking about Antonio Brown, who's there now. We're not talking about Philip Dorsett. We're not talking about, you know, people that were acquired like Deion Branch. We're talking about strictly New England receivers, known for being New England receiver. Julian Edelman is the best New England receiver of all time. So I think he should make the Patriots Hall of Fame, but the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I don't think his numbers kind of stack up to that. And that it really is crazy to say for a guy that is second in all-time playoff receiving yards. You know, he's almost had 1,500 receiving yards in the playoffs alone. You know, and to think about that is unbelievable in itself. And he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to go down in the history books, but he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. And that's pretty crazy to think about. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about college football because some crazy stuff went down in the world of college football. And I kind of want to bring that up a little bit. So this has been Dynasty the Podcast, and we'll be right back after these messages. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Dynasty the Podcast with your host, Austin Yelton. In the first segment, we talked about the NFL. We kind of recapped week one, and we got my opinions on a few things and a few players around the league. Now we're going to take a dive into the step below, and we're going to talk about some college football. Now, this is week two of college football. This is not week one, but some pretty significant changes to the rankings. Let's start it off. Clemson's at 1, Alabama's 2, Georgia's 3. That stays the same. LSU jumps up 2 spots to 4. Oklahoma falls a spot to 5. Ohio State falls a spot to 6. Notre Dame jumps up the spot to 1. Auburn jumps up 2 spots to 8. Notre Dame jumps up a spot, 1 spot to 7. Auburn jumps up 2 spots to 8. Florida jumps up 2 to 9. And then Michigan falls 3 to 10. Now, that rounds out the top 10. Michigan Saturday, they played Army, and they almost lost. They went into overtime, and they beat Army by 3 points. They beat them 24-21, okay? That did not look good for Michigan. That was a bad football game for Michigan. If you take a look, you know, that's going to be a hindrance on their record at the end of the year because there are teams in this college football that's not going to lose a game, okay? Clemson and Alabama, I honestly think they're not going to lose a game. So you're trying to battle into this top four. And if you look at your resume, that's going to hurt you. Only winning 3 points to Army and going into overtime, that's going to be a very, very significant hindrance on your resume for the college football playoffs. You know, like if you think about it, like, LSU played Texas, okay? LSU put up 45 points on that Texas defense, who was, at the time, Texas was ranked 9th in the nation, okay? Texas put up 38 points on LSU, technically 31 because they scored in garbage time. So we'll say 31 points on that LSU defense, who was ranked 6th in the nation. Okay, Ohio State, your arch rival, they put up 42 points on a formidable opponent in Cincinnati who didn't score a single time. Georgia put up 66 points on their opponent who was a lot worse than they were. I can't think at the time who Georgia's opponent was at this time. But that takes away from the fact, and you were only able to scramble 24 points and eke out a victory in overtime to Army. Now, no disrespect to Army. Army has been better than they used to be, and the triple offense is always difficult defensively. Giving up 21 points against Army is good. You know, that's respectable right there. 21 points, triple option offense, that is so difficult to defend. You don't know who's going to get the ball. You got to be disciplined. You got to stay at home defensive end-wise. It's very difficult. So they only gave up 21 points defensively. That's not bad, but what is bad is they gave up, or they only were able to score offensively 24 points. Like, say, for sake of argument, like, and you can't even use, like, the conference to, like, bail you out or anything, because Army's not in a conference. You know what I mean? So, like, say, for example, for sake of argument, Michigan played Duke, okay? Duke is on the exact same level as Army, okay? So Florida played, not Duke, Florida played Kentucky, okay, and Michigan played Army, okay? They both won 24-21 in overtime. Florida's at 9, Michigan's at 10, okay? They both won 24-21 in overtime, okay? Or we'll say, not they both won. We'll say Michigan score stayed the same. Florida won 28-21 in overtime. They won by 7. 28-21 in overtime. Michigan won 24-21. Okay? Say that Florida and Michigan win out completely. And they're battling. Okay? The top three teams, we'll say Clemson, Alabama, and Oklahoma, because those are the top three that are not in the same conference. They all went out. They're all 12-0. So you're fighting for that last fourth spot. Okay? You're both 12-0, Florida and Michigan. You can come down and say, hey, Kentucky was in the SEC. Kentucky's a good football team who has to play good football teams. And they were able to hang in there against an Alabama, against a Georgia, against an LSU. They were able to hang in there, even though they lost those football games, which they probably will. They were able to fight that out. Army is not in a conference. They're independent. So you can't use that to your advantage. That's the one team, you know, you can kind of save yourself. Like, oh, they're in the ACC. Oh, they're in the SEC. Oh, they're in the Big Ten. They're in a tough conference. They're a better football team than what they look like. Army, you can't really make that case. So Michigan not looking great for them. Now, is their season over? No. They won the football game. Their season is far from over. But does it look good? No. Compared to all the other teams, Clemson looked strong. Trevor Lawrence looked like the best quarterback in college football. Alabama, always good, always strong, always talented. Alabama is always fighting for that championship, for the national title. Georgia, they just put up 66 points against their opponent. They're going to have to play Alabama and LSU before the end of the year, but still, very tough. LSU, they just beat a ninth-ranked Texas team. They're looking good. Oklahoma has to play that said Texas team in the in the River City rivalry, and they're in the Big 12. Ohio State, who Michigan has to play. You have great teams ahead of you, so that is going to be a big blemish on their resume. I don't think their season is over, but I think that it's in a very big hindrance, especially if they lose a football game. Honestly, if Michigan loses one football game this whole season, say they lose to, you know, even if it's to Ohio State or Wisconsin or Nebraska or Iowa or Michigan State, say they lose one game this whole year, they could effectively not make the college football playoffs if they lose one game because of this Army game. Because when you're looking at the resumes and you're taking a look, yes, say they lost to Penn State, who's ranked 13 at the time, or like right now. So say if everything stayed the same, Michigan, Penn State beats Michigan. Even though they lost to a good opponent, you're not going to take them in over them eking out a victory over Army. Like, or would, you know, compared to like if, we'll just say Florida, because Florida's like, they're ranked ninth right now. They just came up and they took their opponent and they won. Hold on, I'm trying to look this up right now. They won 45-0 against UT Martin. They beat Miami 24-20. Now, that might hurt them, but they put up 45 points against their opponent that they just played. You know what I mean? You look at, we'll take a look at Notre Dame. Well, Notre Dame only played one game so far, and they played Louisville, and they won 35-17 against Louisville, who's in the ACC. Like, you're going to take other teams over Michigan. So, kind of not saying, now, I'm not saying that they are. I'm not saying they lose one game, they're done. I'm saying that there's a very real possibility that if they lose one game, they could be out because of this Army game. It's very, very possible. And that kind of, it's really crazy to think about that. Week two is that important. We're going to switch gears a little bit, okay? This is a big opinion-based fact to me. So we're going to take a look at the top 25, okay? And I'm going to kind of just scroll through this a little bit. But looking at the top 25, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, four teams in the SEC, or five teams in the SEC ranked in the top 25, okay? Five teams in the SEC. And then you have one, two, three, four, five, six. You have six teams in the Big Ten ranked in the top 25. Let me count that one more time. One, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah. So you have six teams in the top 25, and you have Northwestern, who's really strong. They always say that the SEC is the best conference in football, in college football. The Big Ten is the best conference in college football. Six teams. Yes, yes, the SEC has three of those five teams in the top five, but you also got to think about those teams are going to have to play each other as well. Ohio State, 6. Michigan, 10. Penn State, 13. Wisconsin, 14. They have three teams in the top 15 and six teams overall in the top 25, and Michigan State and Iowa at 18 and 19. Like you have four of your six teams. Four of your six teams in the top 15. The SEC has one, two, three, four. So they have four. Wait. Yeah, they have four in the top. They have five in the top 15. They have five because Auburn. So they both are tied at six. I forgot about Auburn for a second there. I had to take a double look. I forgot Auburn was in the SEC for a second. So, 6-6. Honestly, opinion to me, the best conference in college football is the Big Ten. The Big Ten is the most powerful. The Big Ten always brings in the biggest power. The Big Ten brings in the biggest professionals. I preferably would rather watch Big Ten football more than SEC football. I am a big fan of the Big Ten. Oh, sorry. Big Ten's got seven. I didn't even look at Maryland for a second there. So the Big Ten's got seven to the SEC six. That's baffling to me. You know, like, there are seven teams in the top 25. Seven teams that are from the Big Ten. Like, that's unbelievable to me. Unbelievable. UCF is 17. Let's take a quick detour and let's talk about UCF. Can UCF make it to the college football playoffs? They are on a streak, 2 years in a row, going undefeated. And here's their schedule. Because they kind of gotta make up for it. They're in the ACC? Yeah, the AAC. They're in the American Athletic Conference. Not a strong conference. But they take on Stanford. Then they have Pitt. Then they have UConn. Then they play UC, ECU, Temple, Houston, Tulsa, Tulane, South Florida. Yawn. Their first two games, FAU and Florida A&M. Come on, UCF. You want to make it to the college football playoffs, make a splash. Next year, schedule LSU on the dang roster, or on the dang schedule. Put LSU on the schedule. Don't play Florida Atlantic, play LSU. You know, play Alabama. Well, no, you probably don't want to play Alabama or Clemson or Georgia. Play Florida. Play Florida State. Play a big, powerful, powerhouse team. Play somebody that is battling to get into the top 25. Play a team better than you. You know, you're ranked 17th in the nation. You know you want to kind of stay home. In your non-conference games, you want to make sure you don't travel too much because they're going to have to travel to Cincinnati. They're going to have to travel to Connecticut. They're going to have to travel to Texas because those are all interleague teams. You don't want to make your travel too wild. And if you're going to have to travel, you want to make sure it's sort of close to home. Ninth, you have Auburn right there. Or Florida, sorry. Ninth, you have Florida. But at the time, it was at 11th going into the season. Boom. Iowa is scheduled, Florida, you don't have to travel too much. Gainesville's not too far from where you're at. If you have to go to Gainesville, if they have to come to you, that's even better. Not even that big of a travel. Texas A&M, that's pretty decent travel, but still, it's still not horrifying. You have, excuse me, sorry, I've got something in my throat. Anyways, you have Oklahoma you could have went to. You have Auburn you could have went to. You know, these are teams that you have to schedule on your schedule to make the committee of the NCAA look at you and go, this is a playoff football team. Right now, their schedule, they have Stanford. Stanford's not even ranked in the top 25, okay? Stanford's not a good football team anymore. Like, I don't want to say they're not a good football team, but they're not as good as they used to be. They're not the Stanford of Andrew Luck and Richard Sherman era, you know? They're not the same Stanford anymore. So they're not as big of an opponent. They're not as big of a look. They're not as big of a powerhouse. You have to go out and play somebody that is built for the college football playoffs. Now, that could hurt you. That could make you get a loss. But you would you not rather take a loss playing against a very good football team trying to make the college football playoff than playing it safe and complaining that you're not there? You know, that's the point that it's trying to get across. Yes, you have been undefeated in the last two seasons, but you haven't played anybody in the last two seasons. You know, you have to go out and play somebody that is as good or better than you are, so that way you can prove to the college football committee that you belong there. If they, honestly, if you look at me and you go, they played Florida, okay, and they beat Florida, or they played Auburn. We'll say Auburn because they're right now they're eighth. They're the higher ranked opponent. So they go out, they play Auburn, and they beat Auburn. Even if it's by 1 point, they won 21-20, and they beat Auburn, okay? That, going into the college football playoffs, if they go in 12-0, Michigan goes in 12-0, and you go, look, or no, they go in 12-0, Michigan goes in 11-1, say they lose one game here, they're both battling for that fourth spot. Not only are you going to get in on the 12-0, but you're going to get in on the Florida win. Oh, or the Auburn win. Oh, they beat the number, at the time, the number eighth, let's say they played week two, they beat the number eight or the number 10th ranked team in college football. That's going to put you in. You know, play somebody that has the prestige, that has the push, that has the chance. Go out there and take a risk. That's what football is about. You take a risk, man. Go out there and play somebody important. Let's take another dive onto another team. We're going to look at Notre Dame here. We're going to look at Notre Dame's schedule. They took a bye in week two. They're sitting at 7, and they want to be in the college football playoffs. This is what I'm talking about. September 21st, they're taking on the number 3 ranked Georgia. That is a prime time football game that, if they can beat Georgia, will set them up to go to the college football playoffs. Then they turn around and they play Virginia. Say Virginia wins those two games that they have, that's another top 25 opponent. Then they play LSU. USC, that's another top 25 opponent. Then they play Michigan, that's another top 25 opponent. If you're counting at home, that's four top 25 opponents in their schedule. That is impressive. We can count on one hand how many, we can count on no hands how many UCF top 25 opponents they have. They have zero. You can count that on no hands. Somebody with no hands can count how many. Oh, sorry, that's kind of. All right, I want to take that back. I apologize. I didn't mean to say that. I take that back. You can use just simple math and see that UCF is not going to get in the college football playoffs even if they went out. You know, I would take a one-loss Notre Dame. I would take, honestly, if they say they lost to to Michigan, and they lost to, not if they lost to Michigan, because Michigan not looking really strong. But if we go on their schedule, say they lose to Georgia, and say they lose to Michigan, okay? They lose to Georgia, they lose to Michigan, okay? We'll say that. They lose to Georgia, they lose to Michigan. I would take a Notre Dame team that lost to Georgia and lost to Michigan into the top four of the college football playoffs before I would take an undefeated UCF. I'm saying this right now. I would take a team that lost to Georgia and a team that lost to Michigan, two top 10 football teams. I would take that two-loss team into the top four before I would take an undefeated UCF into the top four, just based on the schedule and based on the resume. Now, if they beat Georgia and they go in with one loss against, like, say they lose to Michigan, say they lose to Virginia, the 25th ranked team. Say they lose, say they lose to New Mexico. Is it New Mexico State or is it New Mexico? Say they lose to New Mexico. It's New Mexico. So say they lose to New Mexico Saturday. And then they went out and they beat a number 3 ranked Georgia, a number 25 ranked Virginia, a number 24 ranked USC, a number 10 ranked Michigan. I would take a one-loss Notre Dame that has lost to New Mexico than I would take over a team that went undefeated in UCF if they go undefeated. 100%. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Like, it dumbfounds me that they sit there and they say that they're the national champions of college football, but you don't schedule anybody to prove that. It's really easy to sit on a throne and say you're the king ant full of ants, a colony full of ants, and say I'm the top dog. These are little guys. You can bully them. It's a lot different to say I'm the king of men to other men. It's a lot different than that. To be the man, you got to beat the man. UCF, you're not the man. Now, you're not going to be able to beat the man. Clemson and Alabama would probably have their way with you. Probably Georgia, too. But if you go and play a team like Florida, who is right now, I'm going to say that again, right now, I'm not saying in the future, in the past, but right now, Florida is the king of Florida State. Like, Florida State, FAU, FIU, Miami, Florida, UCF, out of all the Florida college football teams, Florida's the top dog. They're ranked 9th. They're the best team on paper. They're the best team in the state of Florida. Florida University is. So if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. You schedule Florida. You beat Florida. Then you have a case to say, why are we not in the top four? Why are we not in the college football playoffs? But if you're not going to play a team like that, you have no say. You have no pull. There's so many other teams out there that are playing a tough schedule. Look at Ohio State. They're going to play 6 top 25 ranked opponents in their conference. That's another hindrance. You're in the American Conference. You're not in the Big Ten. You're not in the SEC. You're not in the ACC. You're not in a powerhouse conference. So you only get a few range. I get that. You only get 2 games. I think they get 2 games outside conference play. But with those 2 games, I understand for your first game, you want to schedule a tune-up game. You want to get team confident and play a team that on paper you should beat. But then week 2, get that test in there, man. Get that test in there and play a big opponent. Play somebody out of the water. Play a top 25 team. And then come to us and say, look, now we should be in. And we'll be like, oh, you beat this team, you beat Florida, you beat Auburn, you beat Michigan, you beat Utah. Yes, you belong in the college football playoffs. Get there. You're number 4. You know what I mean? You got to make a splash. That's what these teams are doing now. And that's why I like the college football playoffs. You have to make a splash. You can't just schedule the bare minimum opponents and expect to get into the college football playoffs. You know? Ohio State, they scheduled Miami and UC. Now, those aren't the biggest names that pop off the board, but they're better than, you know, scheduling Tennessee at Chattanooga or, or, you know, scheduling Florida A&M. You're playing two decently powerhouse teams, or not powerhouse teams, but decently teams, and UC, who is a good, they're a pretty good football team, you know, and then you're still going to play Michigan State. You're still going to play Northwestern. You're still going to play Wisconsin. You're still going to play Maryland. You're still going to play Penn State. You're still going to play Michigan. You still have all those teams to play on your schedule because it works out in your favor. But, like, let's take a look at a team in a non-power conference besides Notre Dame. Because we looked at Notre Dame. Notre Dame showed what they can do with scheduling. But we'll take a look at Boise State. Now, Boise State's probably not going to wow me either. And this is why Boise State won't be in. They play Portland State, Marshall, and Florida State. Florida State, now that was a schedule. Florida State, they went out there week one. Florida State's not the same Florida State they used to be, but they're still better than Portland State. No offense to Portland State. So let's take, I mean, Notre Dame's really the only powerhouse here that has four ranked opponents when they don't have to. But you have to, like, technically, because you don't have to, meaning they're not in your conference because Notre Dame's not in a conference. But they went out and they scheduled teams that are going to put, that are going to look nice on their resume when they try to go for the college football playoffs. UCF didn't do that. They really didn't. And it suffice to say that when it comes down to the last four, it's going to show why they're not going to get in. It's going to really show why they're not going to get in. All right, so there goes my tangent on UCF. And any UCF fans that listen to this, if you disagree with what I say, this is only an opinion show. This is my opinion and nobody else's opinion. So honestly, if you're really upset about it, don't listen. I just give what I feel. Now, we're going to do a little bit of a Heisman watch debate here, solo debate, because I'm the only one here tonight, but we're still going to talk about it, get into it. We're not going to get too deep into it. We're just going to kind of look on the surface of things, debate just a little bit, and then kind of roll off the tongue a little bit. So this was last year's. I don't want last year's. I want, well, is it too, I think it's too early. Still, early front runner, Taylor Lawrence, Tua Tagovailoa. Tua Tagovailoa. I can always say Tonga, it's Taga. Tua Tagovailoa, Taylor Lawrence. Clemson, Alabama quarterbacks, top dogs. Somebody that's a dark horse that I really want to see do well and see get into that New York in the final days of college football, J.K. Dobbins. J.K. Dobbins is a very good football player. J.K. Dobbins is a very good running back. Mark my words. This is September 9th, 2019, and I'm calling it. J.K. Dobbins is going to be the best running back in college football. I could be wrong, but I truly believe that he's going to be the best running back in college football. Hands down. Thank you guys for listening tonight. This is a little bit of a shorter episode than we're normally used to, but we are back. I will be back on this podcast. We're going to try to do, we're either going to do it once a week or twice one week and not one the other week. We're going to try to come back Sunday after the games. We're going to I'm going to do a podcast. I'm going to have my brother on and we're going to do a nice little episode Sunday after the NFL games are played. So, I'm going to try, barring any personal things, to get back to you. Thank you guys for sticking around, Dynasty fans. You guys are the real MVPs, and we're going to have a bunch of people on here. We're going to make this the best podcast on all of the planet. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great night, and I will see you Sunday. Thank you for being a Dynasty member.